This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I am joined in the studio by
Christine Wong
and Majida Hashim.
Majida was singing the theme tune just then. I heard you doing it under your breath, weren't you?
Just before you turned on the mics.
Did you hear this, the last few?
It's a catchy theme tune.
Right,
that's
it is pretty catchy.
And you guys were dancing along, okay?
Okay, fair enough.
See?
Yeah, it's because it's Fun Friday.
Mm-hmm. It is Fun Friday.
We are with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon, so do stick with us. If you want to join us in conversation, you can get us on Twitter or at BFM Radio. Or get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Stories for you today. Rocket science for kids is something I want to kick off with. Perhaps one of the best Christmas presents ever.
Mm-hmm.
If you're one of those, if you're so inclined, we're going to be talking a little bit about how Twitter will be bringing along bookmarks. Finally. And the not-so-boring company will be making an appearance a little bit later on, alongside how Firefox have brought out some killer updates. It is super fast, the new version of Firefox, if either of you have used it.
Mm.
Any of you at home, please chime in and let us know about that. And of course, as per usual, to round up the show, we'll be giving you some podcasts to listen to over the weekend, just in case you missed them. So, the perfect holiday present, a kid's book that teaches rocket science. If you are like that. And when I was a kid, this is the thing that I would have loved to read about, you know, science and technology and one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
So to many, rocket science may seem like an impenetrable concept that's just too difficult to understand. But a new book argues otherwise, aiming to break down the basic concepts behind spaceflight to children.
That's so awesome.
It's appropriately titled Rocket Science and was written by Andrew Rader. He's an aerospace engineer at SpaceX. Of course he is. As well as an avid author and game designer. The story is complete with easy-to-follow descriptions and graphics of space travel, explaining what is needed to make rocket engines ignite, for instance, as well as how space vehicles explore our solar system. And the idea behind the book, he says, is to show kids that this type of science isn't unreachable. It's not something that, you know, you can't do.
Mm.
If you are that way inclined, this is something you can sit down, you can learn all about. And the way things work in space is really just based on physics, he tells everybody. Understanding how things work helps to keep kids interested and gives them the idea that they can do it themselves. So it starts off with the basics, like how rockets work, why they're designed the way they are, and then it kind of delves into the concept of rocket staging, the idea of stacking rockets on top of one another and then breaking them apart during a launch to save on weight, all of the stuff that, as an adult, you've kind of learned about it. But as a kid, you're like, how does it do that? Why is it doing that? And instead of asking daddy, who probably doesn't know, you can have a book with these wonderful cartoons inside that give you an exact description of stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, this is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic resource for curious kids. And
yeah.
I can speak from experience because there was, I got a book once that was just called The Brain Book and I was about 10. And, you know, like, it's basically a book about neuroscience, you know, it's got
awesome.
All these case studies and stuff about the brain. And, you know, I absolutely loved it. And let me be clear, I'm not like the best at science. I wasn't a particularly scientifically inclined student when I was at school, but it got me so interested and it taught me so much. Like I learned the word mnemonic from that book, for example.
Yeah.
So this is something that's so fascinating because it's a subject matter that isn't accessible. You know, usually you're like, oh, it's really difficult and it's rocket science. But now it's breaking that down for kids. And I'm really excited to see, you know, if this will have an effect on people getting a bit more interested in the STEM field and going into rocket science because suddenly it doesn't seem so difficult.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, every kid wants to grow up to become an astronaut, you know? And this one shows you that actually if you do want to be an astronaut when you grow up, there's a way you can already start right now.
Yeah.
And then you can pursue with sciences and things. And I actually really like the idea of kids being more involved in science, being more curious about how things work.
Mm.
And I actually see this not just for kids. I see a lot of adults geeking out over this as well.
I would definitely buy this.
I want
this. Really nice.
It's so cool. I mean, this guy's written a couple of books before on space before this one. His other stories featured animal characters growing up in space and were mostly targeted towards younger kids like 5 and 6 years old. This one, though, is aimed at a slightly, you know, older crowd between 6 and 10. So it's not for young kids, but it's for kids who are just a little bit more curious, a little bit more kind of, you know, science-oriented.
Mm.
It's going to be available on Amazon very, very shortly and a whole bunch of other places, and I'm sure you can find it in some of the leading bookstores here soon.
Mm.
Available just before Christmas over the next couple of weeks. Keep your eyes out for it. It's a very simple title, Rocket Science. You can't really go wrong, can you?
Nice.
All right, moving on. Twitter and their bookmarks.
Yes, so I'm really excited about this personally. Twitter has been rolling out a bunch of new features lately, including the very controversial 280 tweet character.
And it doesn't give you a character count anymore.
No, it has a little circle. Which I don't like, because I want to know exactly how many characters I got left. But regardless.
And 100 characters for the handle itself. Yeah. I've seen people's handle going 2 lines long, just the handle.
Well, one thing, so even though that feature has been quite controversial, there's a new feature that they're going to that they're currently testing, and it's actually bookmarks. So if you guys don't already know, a lot of other social media platforms allow you to save something for later. So stuff like Facebook has a save link option. I think Pinterest also has that kind of stuff. And last month, Twitter started work on a new save for later feature for tweets in your timeline that you wanted to flag to refer back to in the future. It's now given the feature a name. It will be called bookmarks, and it's now running tests with it. Now, the news was made public in a series of tweets from Tina Koyama, a staff product designer at the company, who says that the company has picked out different versions of how bookmarks will look and work and will now test them in the Twitter community. Now, judging by what Twitter has been showing off so far, the bookmarking tool might appear in a menu in the bottom right corner of a tweet on mobile, or in like that little V drop-down menu in the upper right corner on a desktop.
Right,
but who uses Twitter on a desktop? Yeah. Let's be real. It will live alongside other further actions, such as sending a tweet in a direct message to someone or creating a moment, which is Twitter's name for when you string together a series of existing tweets around a subject. Now, some people are saying that, you know, technically you can already save some, you can save tweets for later by using the heart or the like function as a way of notating tweets. But what Twitter is saying is that actually the main function of the heart is to notify the sender of the tweet and anyone else reading it that you liked it. So it's a very public way of saving your information, whereas the bookmark will be useful in cases where you may want to keep that information to yourself. Now, Koyama said that...
I can think of some American politicians that maybe have liked something that perhaps they shouldn't have done.
Yep. Uh-huh. We've seen a few controversial likes in the Twitter sphere recently. Now, Koyama said that Twitter audiences have told them that they want tweet to you've bookmarked to be private, so only you can see it. While the bookmarks will be saved privately, Twitter will give you the option for sharing them in a tweet later if you so choose. And also there are a number of other ways of saving tweets for later reference, including sending yourself direct messages or retweeting them so that they live in your profile's timeline, etc. But all of these are more steps, less private, and will never be as easy as simply just pressing a button and saving the tweet.
Useful. Definitely useful.
I love this.
Yeah.
And this is because I am the kind of person that will check Twitter like once in a while, like maybe like twice a day or something. And there'll be something that I want to read, and then I'll be like, okay, I want to read this, but I got to do something. I got to come back to it. And I come back and it's gone.
You have to scroll through so much stuff to get back to it.
It's gone. It's refreshed. And then everything that Twitter says, like, in case you missed it, I'm like, no, there was one thing I missed and you're not showing me it again. And I want it back. Okay, please. So I think this is a really good feature, and I'm really, really excited about it. I already use the Facebook save link feature a lot for like BuzzFeed lists of recipes that I'll probably never cook, but anyway, and lists of places to go and things like that. So now that you can, hopefully we'll see this bookmark feature rolled out soon.
Fingers crossed we're going to get an edit button soon as well.
That would also be great.
I mean, Majida were just mentioning it before we came on air. The amount of times that I've written a tweet out and I've pushed the publish button or whatever, and immediately I see it appear on my timeline and I'm like, oh, that's a spelling error.
That's a typo, right?
No.
And not only is it going out on Twitter, but it's linked to my Facebook account as well. So I have to go to Facebook and delete it from there, and then delete it from Twitter and do the whole thing all over again.
I mean, you could also just proofread your tweets before you send them.
I thought I'd done that.
I mean, you're on the move, right? And you're good typing on one hand. And
yeah, with
like
my
that.
Pop socket, you know.
I will say this. Please bring back that character count number thing because I don't like that little circle.
That circle thing is just like, I don't know how many I have left. I know that it's just moving and it's almost there.
I didn't realize what it was until I actually started typing and saw the little line moving, and I was like, it's counting my characters.
Yeah, that's what I did. I basically started using the widest character that I could. So I got a W and I just kept my finger held down. So it just went, ooh.
Nice.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, it fills that circle. That's how it worked. Brilliant. Okay. Smart, you see. Ladies and gents, if you want to get in touch before we go to the music, you can get in touch via Twitter. We're at BFM Radio. Of course, if you want us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. When we come back, the not-so-boring company from Elon Musk. He offered something for sale, something a little bit different. Something to talk about when we get back. Up next, though, some music from The Strokes. It is Soma here on BFM 89.9.
Bole Fikir Mandalam. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Majida Hashim
and Christine Wong.
So the not so boring company, Elon Musk's tunneling venture, they've dug up a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
But not from the way that we would have expected.
We thought he would do it, right? So the headline reads: the not so boring company, Elon Musk tunneling venture, digs up $300,000 in hat sales, and that's from Forbes, right? Elon Musk at the same time yesterday also tweeted that his initial hat offerings going great with over $300,000 sales already. Thanks for buying this super boring hat. You rock.
And when you say hat sales, right? You mean
hat sales.
Sales of hats, as in hats that you wear on your head?
No, I thought this was going to be some great funding term that I've never come across before. You know, as an entrepreneur, we're always looking for sources of funding, like initial hat
and
offering.
New buzzwords.
Right? Yeah. Sounded like initial coin offering somewhere there, but you're right, Christine. It's literally hats.
Okay.
Like baseball hats. The thing that you wear on your head.
$300,000.
And it's not the most exciting hat either, okay? You can go and look this up. It's a simple black hat with the words "The Boring Company" in white stitching. It has an adjustable Velcro strap. One size fits all. $20 per hat.
You know, only Elon Musk can make a boring hat that says "The Boring Company" on it, something that can sell for $300,000.
I don't know. I mean, I think Donald Trump had a pretty good run of it Make America Great Again.
It's a Tesla hat. You expect it to do maybe something budget
no,
or something.
I mean,
right,
but it can read your mind.
The thing is with Elon, Elon Musk, he does have a sense of humor, and you know he's kind of self-aware and he's self-effacing and all that kind of stuff. So the very fact that he's called his company The Boring Company.
Yeah, fantastic.
I think is superb. Now he's made a stupid hat.
Yeah.
That he knows people think is funny and will buy it.
It's $20.
This is what I think is that he kind of is parodying Trump a little bit.
That's
my personal opinion, is that he's just gone, you know what? If he can sell hats, I can also sell hats.
Yeah,
great.
Right.
Let's go.
So, did you work out how many he's had to sell then to $300,000?
So it's been up for a month, right, since he has announced this initial hat offering. So $300,000 at $20 a hat, he sold about 15,000 hats. 15,000 hats over 30 days is about 500 hats a day. 500 hats a day over 24 hours, 20 hats per hour. That's every 3 minutes, somebody's buying a boring hat.
All right. If anyone has a picture of the boring hat that they've purchased, please tweet it in.
If you bought one, let us know.
Send a picture. Send a selfie.
I mean, you look on the website, it's like The Boring Company, $20. Oh, okay. It's like the best crowdfunding thing for hats. I mean, you can print hats for almost nothing, and if you're printing 15,000 of it, you're just printing in bulk.
I wish I could just make hats and then just get lots of money. That'd be fantastic.
You're not Elon Musk.
I know.
Right?
This is the issue.
You need to form a company that has a ridiculous name that people will find funny.
Okay, well, fast forward 10 years, I'll find a pun somewhere.
We'll find a pun somewhere, right?
And this is over $250,000 on a pretty cheap product. And the best part is that it's funding The Boring Company, and it's a subterranean tunnel network which has not even broken ground yet. It's still in the test stage somewhere in California. The project has not begun.
Have people just bought this then because it's Elon Musk selling it?
I think so.
Probably, yeah.
I was looking for the company valuation. I cannot find it in the company. Just the valuation for The Boring Company. But if it's going to raise over $250,000 in 30 days by selling hats, imagine if he starts selling T-shirts or keychains and all the whole range of merchandise.
Would you guys buy this hat?
I would.
Yeah. I would kind of buy this hat.
I mean, I would buy it. I wouldn't wear it because hats don't suit me, but I'd have it on my, you know, yeah, I just want one.
I have one.
Yeah, I want one.
I'd wear it just for the joke. You know, I go to work at The Boring Company.
Right.
The most boring of companies.
One of those.
Yeah.
Right.
And the thing is, it's been quite a week for Elon Musk. Earlier in the week, he has unveiled the Tesla semi-truck.
$150,000 to $200,000, right?
To be fair, it is a very beautiful truck.
It is.
Cool. And he himself quoted in a tweet, he said that this truck will blow your mind clear out of your skull and into an alternate dimension.
Wow.
and he does.
He's nothing if not modest, right?
Yeah.
You know? But he also revealed the Roadster earlier on in the week as well. Mm-hmm. That was a bit of a surprise coming out of the back of the truck. And his whole success of the 100 megawatt battery that he's produced for Australia.
Yeah, on a bet that he did on Twitter.
Yeah.
$50 million worth of it. And he said he was going to build a lithium-ion battery in Australia in 100 days or it would be free.
Yeah.
And yeah. It was just so bold. It's like, I'm going to build a 100 rays or else you can have it for free.
This is one of those reminders that there are people who just live on a completely different plane of existence than you do.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to bet that I can build a giant battery in how long?
In 100 days.
In 100 days. That's my bet. And then we're just sitting here like, I don't know, we're getting lunch from the food court next door.
And they're betting, they're not betting like, you know, 100 ringgit, 200 ringgit. They're betting $50 million.
Casual.
Yeah.
Right? Casual. That's just like pocket change.
I mean, he only announced that something like middle towards the end of September, right? And everybody was like, don't be silly, Elon. Don't be silly. Boom. There it is.
If anyone can do it, Elon
129
can.
129 megawatt hour battery built done in South Australia.
Not jealous at all. Not jealous at all. I want a hat. Right, time for a break. Music coming up from...
Send us hats.
Yes, from Janis Joplin with Piece of My Heart, followed by R.E.M. with It's the End of the World as We Know It. It's not, though. It's the weekend. And when we come back, Firefox, how they will soon warn you if you're visiting a previously hacked site. Really interesting stuff. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to BizBytes here on BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with...
Christine Wong.
And Majida Hashim.
We were not sure what the order of introduction was.
I wanted to keep you on your toes, you see.
You just spaced out.
I know. It's Friday.
I was just
waiting for
that like little cue.
I didn't give it you, right?
Well,
I just wanted to see if you were paying attention.
I was.
Right.
Just waiting.
So stories we've had today so far. We started off with rocket science for kids. We then moved on to Twitter bookmarks and then the not-so-boring company. Just to clarify, though, somebody has mentioned that the bet that Elon Musk did make, he was already halfway through. Right? I mean, and that was something I was aware of, but you know, even that, when you're saying it's $50 million on the line, it's still, you know, I'd still be worrying about it a little bit, right?
Just a wee bit.
Okay, let's move on to our next story then. It is how Firefox will soon warn you if you're visiting a previously hacked site.
Now, I'm not going to lie. The moment Google Chrome came out, I kind of assumed all other browsers didn't really exist because that's I'm a bit loyal. But Firefox has been having a bit of a comeback. It's having a pretty good run right now. I know Rich is a very, very big fan of its much speedier and better looking Quantum browser. But it is now working on a new feature that security fans are bound to like. It will warn you if you're visiting a site that has suffered a data breach before. So Firefox is working on the feature in collaboration with a website called Have I Been Pwned, which is P-W-N-E-D, which is a site that can check your email and tell you if your credentials have been stolen by hackers. So it's collaborating with this website for the kind of technology in a way. Troy Hunt, the security expert behind Have I Been Pwned, confirmed the news and tweeted that yes, we're doing some awesome things with Mozilla, and the update is still in the early stages, but you can actually already download it from GitHub, then compile it and add to Firefox if you want to test it out, only if you have the developer edition, though. Mm. The add-on is fairly basic for now. If you visit a site on the what they're calling the naughty list, it will throw up a flag saying you have visited hack site and then it'll list the website. It won't stop you from entering, but it does give users an idea that at some point or another, the site's security procedures were less than optimal.
Right.
Hunt is working with Mozilla on the code, but isn't quite sure how the final feature will work. He says that Firefox is just looking at which sites have been breached, and they're discussing other ways of using the data in the future. And because Firefox has such a broad reach, it's actually a really great way to get more exposure around data breaches. What is concerning, though, is that hacked sites, on the other hand, might not be too thrilled about a feature that will basically shame them about their previous lack of security. However, if properly implemented, it could be very useful to consumers to let them know that they might need to be a bit more careful, maybe change their password, not recycle the breached one, maybe. And so far, the response has been quite enthusiastic and positive as well.
I think it's a great idea.
I love this. I really do.
I mean, it is useful. I mean, would it bother you, though, if you went to a website and it pops up, hey, just to let you know, at some point in the past, this website has been hacked, right?
I mean, that's the whole point, though, is to kind of alarm you into being a bit more secure.
Correct. Mm-hmm. You want to sit there and go, oh, well, maybe do I need to go to this website? I will check my password and make sure everything's safe before doing it. I mean, we say to people all the time, check your passwords, update your software. Another nudge like this can only be a good thing.
Yeah. The only problem of this is that at the moment, it's an add-on. It's not built into the browser itself from what I can tell. And I don't know how many people will specifically go out and download it and add it to their their version of Firefox browsers, because some people might just want to live in the dark in this blissful like sea of ignorance, you know, and just be like, yeah, my passwords are fine.
They're fine.
They're fine. I don't need to change them. It's so difficult.
Yeah, why has my bank account been hacked?
You have to re-enter your password twice and it's so much work.
It is. Oh.
I mean, I can see from the point of view of the person who owns the website or the agency.
That's
or the
true
thing,
as well.
The company that owns the website is like, I fixed it already and it still pops up. So maybe one of the things they could do is that it's have a time to it. Like this site has been hacked in the last 30 days, and in the last 30 days, if it wasn't hacked, then that thing goes away.
Mm.
Because things can be hacked.
Yeah, that's fair.
You fix it, you know.
That's fair.
Yeah. Now I fixed it.
You could also maybe have a message like it was addressed at this thing or this thing, and the problem has been fixed on this date or something like that, maybe, just to reassure people like it's happened before, but it probably won't happen again. Mm. Hopefully, crossing fingers.
Mm. I'm imagining all these government sites that has been hacked like over and over again. There are a lot of Malaysian sites. I mean, earlier this year, in August, there were 27 Malaysian sites that got hacked because of the SEA Games and the flag kerfuffle.
Yes.
And all of them would have all this pop up for no reason at all. I mean, that was a one-time thing. The Indonesians were not very happy, but then it's over.
Yeah.
And they don't deserve to have this thing pop up if someone has this kind of add-ons.
That's fair. But I think, you know, Mozilla is really making some steps forward to try and actually get back a little bit more into the market than it currently does, because Google Chrome currently dominates the market at roughly 54%, with Safari following at 14% and Firefox at only 6%, which I find quite surprising because I'm not a massive fan of Safari myself.
I love Safari.
Not a massive fan.
And I'll tell you why. I mean, I have multiple desktops on my laptop.
Right.
On one screen, I have Safari, and on the other screen, I have Chrome. And the reason I do that is because my Google Docs seem to be much faster loading in Chrome. And yet when I want to print off something, I flip over to Safari and I use the reader view. And when it prints, it gives me a really nice printed page, you know, whereas Chrome can't do that for me yet. Firefox still hasn't got that yet. But in terms of just purely surfing the internet, I can guarantee you right now, the new version of Firefox will whip everything else. It's so super fast.
It's quantum for a reason.
It's ridiculously fast, you know, I was really skeptical.
See, this is the thing. I'm really excited to see, you know, they're trying to kind of make a comeback and they're actually implementing features that could be very, very useful.
Yeah. Okay, time for a break. Music coming up from Arcade Fire. It is The Suburbs, followed by a little bit of Eagles. When we come back, we'll be giving you some podcasts that you should be checking out over the weekend and some other stuff. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up, but as per usual, we've got some podcasts that we'd like to recommend you have a listen to over this weekend, starting off with...
Yeah, so I did a Raise Your Game show this Monday at 1:30 with my guest Matt Pace, who is the Senior Vice President of Succession and C-Suite Services at DDI and, more importantly, co-author of Leaders Ready Now, Accelerating Growth in a Faster World. So we just talked about the concept of leadership readiness, how you can never really be truly ready, but how it's a growing process and its development. So it was a really fascinating one that's called Leaders Ready Now, and go look for it on our app.
All right then, Majida, you got something about the Swedish meatballs?
Yeah, no, not the
Swedish.
So on Tuesday, I spoke to two Swedish and social entrepreneurs, Fiona Hazel, who runs Restock. It's a mobile app that helps small, really, really small micro vendors in Kenya. Buy in bulk together and then get it sent to where they are. And then the other social entrepreneur is Emily Eckbert from The Saga. And she makes really cool handmade stuff and she sells it all over the world. One of the things she does is she finds places where they have weapons and that's a problem.
I've heard about this.
She gets them to melt it down. She turns it into jewelry.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. So you can look for Spunky Swedish Social Entrepreneurs.
Spunky Swedish social entrepreneur.
Yes.
That's not a mouthful at all, is it?
You can try over the weekend to say it three times over and over again. It's also a fun.
Is that a challenge?
Or you could just refer to it as C.
Yeah. You wait until Monday when we're all doing it, right? Okay, finally, it was just broadcast this morning, of course. Matt Splained, the Christmas special. So this morning's chat between Jeff Sandu and Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. It's another episode of Matt Splained. This time they ask, is it better to give or to receive? According to Matt, he believes that the best scenario is for you to give and him to receive. That's a typical Matt thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else is a bit of a waste of time. So Matt draws up his Christmas wish list to Jeff Sandu in hopes that somebody would gift Matt the Tesla Model X. Don't we all wish for that? From the wacky to the absurd, you can trust these two to pick up some gifts for Christmas. Again, it's Matt Splained Christmas. It aired this morning at 10 a.m. As usual, you can head over to the podcast, bfm.my/podcast, if you want to listen to it the old school way, or download the app from the Apple App Store or Google Play and have a listen there. Same goes in case you missed any part of this show. Now, we'll quickly run through the stories that we've done today. I started off with a story about how a guy has written a rocket science book for kids. He's a engineer for Tesla's company,
SpaceX.
So he's involved with them. We then moved on to
how Twitter is finally testing a bookmarks feature, which is a feature that will privately flag tweets for later.
And then we spoke about Elon Musk's not-so-boring company and how it has dug up $300,000 in its initial hat offering sale.
It's IHO.
Indeed. And then we spoke about how Firefox will soon warn you if you're visiting a site that has been previously hacked.
Oh dear, oh dear. Right, that's all we've got time for today. But don't go anywhere, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, of course, we do have the Breakfast Grill replay. Malaysia and China have enjoyed a strong and robust relationship since they became the first Southeast Asian nations to establish diplomatic relations with China back in 1974. And earlier this year, it was reported that the bilateral trade between Malaysia and China is expected to increase to $160 billion, that's 671.7 billion ringgit, by 2020. So the Breakfast Grill spoke to Dato Abdul Majid Khan, the former Malaysian ambassador to China and president of the Malaysia-China Friendship Association, to discuss the nature of Malaysia-China relationships and what it entails for both countries in the future. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. I'm Rich Bradbury on behalf of Christian Wong and Majid Hashim. We will be back on Monday, of course, from deepest, darkest Bandar Utama. It has been Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.